Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Gathering. The supernatural world can be a dark, intimidating, and scary place. We gather to shine light on the mysterious and misunderstood aspects of the paranormal world. We bring to the table years of experience as mediums, healing channels, and paranormal investigators.
We share true stories from our experiences to dispel fear where we can and help you discover the amazing layers that make up the paranormal world. You are invited to gather around the metaphysical table with us and discuss the worlds of the unseen on The Gathering Radio Show.
Hey, I'm like, what happened to our introduction?
Go.
You actually might have been talking over it, Stephanie. Sorry about that, everybody.
No.
So anyway, hopefully not. Sorry about that. Well, welcome. Sorry, we totally didn't hear our introduction. Welcome to The Gathering Radio Show on the Para-X Network. Sorry about that. We are we're missing our intro music. We're usually dancing around to our intro music, getting ready, and we didn't hear it. Sorry about that, everybody.
No, anyway. We just heard a bunch of silence. I thought maybe there was an issue going on.
Whoops.
Oh, well.
Whoops.
It is what it is once in a while.
Anywho, we're all excited because it's been warm today. It was 11 degrees and we were thrilled.
So
we're all giddy today. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's been a little bit of a thaw now today, which I'm excited about. And we're actually able to get out and about now and do our things. You've been busy, I think, recently, yeah. Steph. We'll chat here a few minutes before we get our guest in.
Yeah. I have been. I've been just kind of doing lots of stuff. You know, even though we've been stuck in the house, I got to say it was, you know, I have been going out anyway, freezing. But I will talk about the owls. But yeah, I'm really excited for our guest for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's been interesting with this deep freeze. You know, I had a paranormal meeting on Friday, which is virtual, of course, and it has been for the past year, almost a year. And one of the questions was, does extreme cold or extreme temperatures like this affect paranormal? And I thought, gosh, that's a good question. Because one of the things that we were discussing this summer, after doing an investigation, a very small investigation this summer, and it was really humid, and it seemed to affect the visual aspect and the things that we actually weren't able to see while we were investigating. And so I thought, yeah, I think humidity has an impact on the paranormal. We were still able to hear, you know, hear things and have audio experiences, but the visual was really lessened and it just wasn't there. And so I thought, you know, I think it does, the extreme cold does have an impact too. Actually, I think it makes it easier for spirit to communicate, and I don't know if I have nothing to back this up other than personal experience, but it's interesting how much more I think I can hear right now and see. And I wonder if because there isn't as much humidity or very, very low humidity right now, that there isn't as much for spirit to like swim through, I guess, to get here or to come through for the different, I don't know, dimensions or I don't know. What do you think about that, Steph?
Yeah, well, you know, and when it's cold outside, it's really kind of quiet. But sound does travel. So you might be able to hear that paranormal sounds a lot easier in the wintertime, you know. And it might be due to the humidity. I mean, that's a good thought. You know, there's not a lot of humidity out when it's, you know, below zero or as cold as it is today. So, I mean, it totally makes sense to me. It's interesting to think about.
Yeah, I thought, you know, just because it came up this summer, I thought it was an interesting idea, and I'm sure other, you know, people have studied it or whatever. I just haven't seen it. And yeah. I'm just thinking about it myself. And yeah, it seems like there's more activity right now. And especially with this deep cold, I'm hearing a lot more. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. I wonder if it is because there's less humidity and it's easier for spirit to, you know, get through because they don't have as many layers. I don't know. I mean, probably not explaining that.
Right.
Well.
No, I get it.
But anyway,
I just thought
it was interesting.
Yeah, no, I do too. And I do think that, I never thought about it, but it makes sense because we can hear a lot more in the wintertime than we can in the summertime, for sure, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
There's an absence of...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
There's an absence of all like the bugs and stuff too, which make a lot of noise, right? There is none.
Well, right, and they definitely have that mm-hmm. Visual interference in the summertime when you're outside doing it. Well, inside too, I suppose, just the bugs and things, but...
Yeah.
I know Joe in the chat room said, "You think they'd like the cold if the temp drops when they are around?" And I think so. I mean, I don't know. It seems like it's more active right now, and I don't know if it's because there's just even less humidity than normal in the wintertime, and you know, sound and maybe even the visual can transmit easier. Or, I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. So it was kind of a cool discussion that we had on Friday, and. You know, it's fun to have that, you know, kind of cool topic to mm-hmm. think about.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. So we have a really fun gal on with us tonight. Everyone, let's welcome Lori Nalmet. Hi, Lori. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Lori is with the Minnesota DNR, and... she knows all about raptors, which, you know, they are a frequent subject on the Gathering radio show because, you know, a lot of them are my spirit animals. But Lori also is Lori, you run the camera for the Minnesota DNR nest, am I right?
For the bald eagle nest, yes. And for the peregrine falcon nest as well.
Oh, you do? Oh, I didn't know about that one. Oh, fun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fun.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that was our first camera.
Where is that? Well, you don't need to tell me that, but I didn't know that.
No, it's downtown St. Paul. It's not accessible, so I can even tell you it's in the what used to be the Bremer Building,
mm-hmm.
At on the top floor. There's no way for anyone to access it other than from inside the building. So it's not, you know.
Yeah.
Other than possibly causing an accident, people going there to see it, often slow down and look up to the top floor while I'm driving on 7th Street in downtown St. Paul. It's not a good idea.
No,
but
absolutely not.
But
absolutely.
You can see the birds up there.
Yeah. Well, and we have, there's falcons in downtown Minneapolis too. And I don't know if they still nest up there. But
they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's fun. I know I used to be on a different side of the building because my day job, I work downtown Minneapolis, and the window that I used to have faced that way where the city center is, you know? And so I used mm-hmm. to see those falcons used to fly right by the windows, and it was the coolest mm-hmm. thing. And I would just get up out of my desk and say, "Oh, it's the falcons." And of course everybody was like, "Oh my God, stop," you know? But now I'm on a different mm-hmm. side of the building, so I don't see them very much anymore, unfortunately. But yeah, that was always a treat too when we'd see them buzzing by the windows, you know.
Yeah, they're so fast.
They are. So the DNR nest has some exciting news today.
Yes, she laid her first egg of the season today.
Yay!
Yay!
Yeah. So excited. I just wasn't sure it was going to happen this year. So really excited about that. And in fact, it left me rather unprepared to write a newsletter tonight because I just wasn't expecting it, I guess.
Yeah.
I have no faith. But
yeah. Well, it's been, that nest has been so active. There's been so many crazy things happening there in the last few years. I remember when I first tuned in, it was a pair that had been there for a while. You know, and they were there for many years. And then suddenly the dad disappeared, right? And then she found another one. And actually, there were several vying for her attention that year, if I remember right. And, right? Am I right, Lori?
trying to think back.
It was like 2 or 3 years ago, I think. And yes, then
it was.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And because I was there. I mean, a friend of mine, Dave, and I were over there photographing, and I've never seen anything like it in all my years photographing eagles. They were just, she just had an entourage, I think, you know. And then she settled on one, but then she moved on, and now there's a new gal there. And now that, the one that she mated with last year is gone, and there's a new guy in the nest this year. Am I right?
Correct.
Yeah. Eagle yeah, craziness.
Well, and she's a cougar because this guy is young. He's young. He's, you know, he's definitely 4 and a half going on 5 years old. So
yeah.
He doesn't even have the full white head and really stark yellow eyes. He's yep. got some brown still in his eyes, and he's got some. And so, you know, the Friends of the Non-Game Facebook page, shout out. Hi, everyone. They named, well, there's been a name floating around on that page that the male is Harry because he kind of reminded us of Dirty Harry. just because he looked like he had a dirty head and a yeah. dirty tail because his tail was not completely yep. white. So, yep.
yeah. Yeah. Isn't that fun? Yeah. I love it. It's the eagle drama. It really is.
It really is.
So one of the things I have to ask is I've been watching, there's another, and I'm sure you know about it, but there's another bald eagle nest that's close to downtown Minneapolis on the river. And that couple, they usually don't lay eggs until March. But this particular nest, they always lay their eggs earlier, like now. Is that unusual or is that kind of normal for eagles to do in different months?
The typical and what I almost said psychologists, what scientists have always said about birds in Minnesota is eagles in Minnesota, that their average laying month is March. And so mm-hmm. March is average, which means that there's eggs after that and there's eggs before that. The original female on this nest, when we first put the camera on, mm-hmm. she was super early. She laid her eggs the first week in January, the first year we had the camera on. And of course, I don't have any data on when she laid her eggs before we had the camera up. But she had been there for several years before that because that's, you know, we wanted to put a camera on an active nest, right? So,
yeah.
And so it is early, and I think it's because of all the competition. I believe that it's because there's so many other birds in that vicinity, in that same area. Mm-hmm. There are probably 10 nests within mm-hmm. 10 miles of that nest. And so there's so much activity, and there's so many other birds coming around that I think that they get, their hormones get all amped up and they get, they want to be in a hurry. And it's a competition sort of a thing, you know, if they nest earlier, then they are going to be at an advantage as far as food competition. So, mm-hmm. you know, if they're staggered further away from the typical nesting of other bald eagles. So that's my theory. I think last year she laid her first egg on Valentine's. Well, no, was it the first? She laid one egg on Valentine's Day. I can't remember if it was the first one, but it was the same week. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Now, Carl.
So, yeah, I was just going to say there's a couple of questions in the chat room.
Sure.
First one is Karen. She was asking, is the super cold weather going to be risky for the egg? Which you kind of just answered, but would love to hear an expanded answer if you have one.
Yeah, well, yes, it can be very risky. The first year that we put the camera up, the eggs froze. We're pretty sure. We never went up there and retrieved the eggs, but there was a day in February that was super cold, like it has been this week, that both the male and the female took off and left the eggs uncovered for about 45 minutes, 40 minutes or so, and they never hatched, and we're pretty sure that that was what happened. But the difference is moisture, and we were just talking about that, that if the eggs get really, if a nest gets really wet and it holds a lot of moisture in it and then it gets cold, then the eggs are much more likely to freeze. They can tolerate a certain amount of time being uncovered, but they, you know, if it's very wet and then it, and then they get cold, because the eggs are rather porous, and so they can absorb some of that moisture, and that's good. They need a certain amount of moisture in order to incubate properly. I think people who raise chickens will tell you the same thing. But if it gets, you know, if it's just a consistently cold and wet season, then it's less likely. Now, I think this year, she at least waited until it was above zero here, right?
Yeah.
She had, it finally, you know, popped up above freezing, and she, or no, above zero, not above freezing. She laid her first egg. So I could tell she was getting ready, but I honestly wasn't sure if that male was up to it. We'll see if they're fertile, you know.
Yeah.
That's the other interesting thing about this young male. We'll see how, if he's actually fertile. He's got the hormones, so we'll assume that he is.
He's such a young
one,
though.
Hope he'll have eggs. Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the next, grab the next question?
No,
okay, so there's another question from Karen in the chat room. She said, why would she choose such a young male or a young mate?
You know, who knows? It's not something, you know, I know an awful lot about eagles, but that's one thing I can't do is read their minds. I have no idea why. You know, he may have been proving himself to be more persistent and diligent than some of the other males, perhaps. Who knows why they choose what they do? Because she was kind of aggressive to him in the beginning, and she still will kind of snap at him from time to time. Today I saw him sort of pecking at her head a little bit, which was interesting. But you know, that's kind of a nest. Kind of a leftover from being in the nest. They learn how to be aggressive towards each other in order to establish dominance, and they will act that way. But you know, he probably was showing off his hunting skills, and maybe that interested her. But it may be that she was just, you know, he was just so persistent in pursuing her that she couldn't get away from him. And watching on the camera, that's kind of what it seemed like.
Oh,
she's like, hey, he's like, hey, you got a nice house here. You know?
Yes,
it's
absolutely.
It's a coveted spot. It's a highly coveted nest for eagles around. In fact, it attracts an awful lot of attention. We get visitors there from time to time. Were you watching yesterday?
Yeah, I didn't watch it, but I was on the Facebook group chat, and they were posting pictures of the different eagles that were in there, the young ones, you know. So
Yep. There was a juvenile there yesterday for, I don't know, half hour or longer. He was there for quite a while. It was there for quite a while, and there's some speculation that that might have been the chick from last year.
Yeah,
which is,
I saw that.
What
too.
Everyone has been calling it E2, which is it's the right age. You know, the colors and things on a 1 year old eagle would look like that. A 1 year old, you know, juvenile, immature bird. So
yeah. So isn't that fun? So that's good to that, and they do come back occasionally, don't they? Because
yeah,
the
I mean,
babies.
And there's no way to know for sure, but certainly they recognize the area, and they're comfortable and familiar with hunting in that area. So you know, they may hang around, but then, you know, we put transmitters on some birds, and you'd be surprised how far away they go and end up nesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it came in and ate a bunch of leftover duck and then took the head and took off with it.
Oh, Yes.
Yep.
There is a, right by the tree where the nest is, there's like a pond, and mm-hmm. there's always ducks. So they have a lot of food within a really short distance of the nest, you know? So mm-hmm. they're very lucky. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that makes that nest so appealing to other eagles.
Right. Exactly.
So one of the questions from the chat room, Sherry is wondering, and I'm not sure anybody can do this, but she's saying, how can we encourage local raptors to nest in our trees? I don't think you can you, Lori?
No, not really. I mean, you know, I hate to say this, but you could put bird feeders out.
Right.
But, you know, because there are many raptors that eat other birds, including bald mm-hmm. eagles, and but there's all kinds of raptors that eat other birds. And so I get, you know, from time to time, I had a broadwing hawk in my neighborhood this last summer and wiped out all the birds in my neighborhood, pretty sure. But so that's one way. You know, the other way would be to, if you have a lot of mice or rodents, rabbits, squirrels, mm-hmm. things like that, but it's absolutely forbidden to feed wildlife or release, you know, not non-native wildlife or anything like that. So putting bird feeders out is about the only thing you can do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, to attract their prey.
Right. So
if you attract their prey, then they're going to be attracted to that area, but they don't, you know, they're strictly opportunistic. So wherever it is that they can find enough food, that's where they're going to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And eagles will eat like roadkill, correct?
Yeah, they are scavengers.
Mm-hmm.
So they are also opportunistic. So they do, you know, from time to time, they have brought things on into the nest on the camera that you could tell was roadkill because of the condition that the carcass is in when it comes to the nest, it appears to have been hit by a car or something. And that's really dangerous for the adults, for the hunting eagles, because that brings them close to the road. So it's unfortunate, but they've learned to adapt. And mm-hmm. we think that the male last year, the male had some blue markings on his tail, and I suspect that it never went away, even after cleaning and raining and all of that other stuff. It was very, you know, it was this blue spot. And I suspect that it may have had a collision with a car or something. I can't think of any other way that it would have blue markings on its tail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. I know Karin is saying she saw about a half a dozen bald eagles along with ravens eating a deer carcass. I have seen that up north as well, and that's an amazing sight to behold when you see that.
It is.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool. You know, I think it happens up north a lot because I have seen it a few times up there. Mm-hmm. And every time you see one, it's like it takes your breath away, right? Because you have these big, majestic mm-hmm. bald eagles, and of course, I love crows and ravens too, and they're all kind of harmoniously just chowing. You know, it's like smorgasbord is out.
Yeah, it's kind of fun because even at our nest, you see you'll see other critters coming in to eat. Like at night, we've got white-footed mice that show up on the nest at night, and that's cool to see because now we have infrared on the camera, mm-hmm. so we can see at night into the nest. And they do, they're very harmonious when they have plenty to eat like that. They'll all just feed on the same carcass, and they, you know, might prefer different parts of it depending on what species is at the buffet.
Yeah mm-hmm. That is so cool. I love it. And this is the time of year, too, that the eagles love to be on the Mississippi River down near Red Wing, you know, in that area, because I've seen them, and they stand on the edge of the ice, and then they grab the fish.
Yeah.
It is It is the coolest thing. And, you know, and there's like hundreds of them. I mean, I've been there where I've seen like 100 bald eagles, you know, within just a few trees, you know, and then they're out on the ice. And it's just the most amazing thing for anyone who lives in Minnesota. It's go down to the, you know, Mississippi down there, down by Red Wing and Wabasha, and see what you can find. Because, oh, it's amazing sight.
It is amazing. And there's a lot more trumpeter swans in Minnesota now as well. And so you will often see trumpeters in those areas of open water as well. So that's a lot of fun because they're huge, majestic birds.
They are beautiful. So Jerry is saying that there are 60 species of eagles all over the world, but only two in the U.S. Is that true? Just golden and bald?
Yes, that is true. And I don't know enough about, I mean, I can identify a couple of them, but if I saw them flying above me somewhere else in the world, I wouldn't be able to identify it that way. But certainly I've seen, I've got a book that has all the different species, and it's surprising how many, you know, different types of eagles there are in all shapes and sizes.
Mm-hmm. And there's that one, the biggest one of all, and I can't remember what the name of it is, Heidi. It's that one that looks like they almost have a human face.
Isn't it like a harpy eagle?
Stellar's,
yeah.
Harpy and the Stellar Sea Eagle. That's another one that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Harpy.
Wow.
Yeah, harpies are cool.
They're really cool and weird looking, like paranormal.
Yeah. Yeah, because they almost have a, you know, like a human face, like we said.
Well, their head is almost as big as a human's head.
Yeah.
Huge.
Which is entirely frightening, frankly.
Yes, it really is. I totally lost my train of thought. I'm so sorry. But eagles and hawks, now hawks don't nest till later in the year, am I right? I don't really know a lot about hawk nests because I never really see them.
Correct. Yeah, correct. They, you know, they'll start nesting in anywhere from March until June because they can renest. I know that there was an eagle pair that renested this year. I'm not sure if that was Florida. I haven't been following it, but she laid one brood and lost it, and then she laid more eggs. So the hawks will do that as well. They can renest. They can raise one brood and then start another one later. It's less common with raptors to do that, though, because it takes so much out of them physiologically to be able to produce eggs. So typically it's just one brood a year. But like owls, we talked about owls a minute ago, and they nest in the middle of winter. So that's like the December, January is when they're laying their eggs, mating and laying their eggs.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll talk. Yes, we have to talk about those owls. But, you know, we're almost 30 minutes past the hour. So, Heidi, is it okay with you if we go to break?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. So this is the Gathering Radio Show on the Para X Radio Network.
This is Aaron Gilbert from Ghost Adventures, and you're listening to Para-X Radio.
Demons. Vampires. Werewolves. Skinwalkers. All of this and more. Sunday nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Get lost with us.
Era X Radio.
For a truly unique podcast experience, we have you covered. Spirit Bayou with CJ Dunham airs live from the Third Coast in Southeast Texas on Tuesday and Fridays at midnight Eastern Time, covering Creole folklore and folk magic to strange paranormal activity to new equipment for the field. CJ Dunham is a Catholic swamp witch, a devotee to our Mother Mary in the Trinity, a true believer in our Lord, the Holy Ghost, and Christ. Peace be with your spirit and the spirits by you.
Welcome back to the Para X Radio Network. This is the Gathering Radio Show, and we are talking about raptors tonight, and we have our special guest here. We're talking, actually, we've been talking about eagles primarily for the first half hour, correct?
Yeah.
Try and move into other raptors here soon.
Yeah, for sure. And so right before the break, we had started talking about owls because the great horned owls are nesting. And as all of our listeners know, that I have a pair that live very near to me that I'm always looking after. Not that I'm looking after them, I'm just worried about them. And I was telling you, Lori, before the show that I think the female, who I call Mama, laid her eggs about 10 to 14 days ago. And of course, now I'm worried because it's been so cold for so long. But they seem to have this ability to keep those eggs warm enough to be okay.
Yep, they're pretty adept at that. Especially because they nest in the middle of winter, especially owls, their fur is, or their feathers and their downy feathers underneath are so warm that they keep their eggs very close together and very warm. And of course, once they're warm, then they generate their own heat a little bit as well. So,
And I know I went over there tonight because I knew we were talking to you tonight, so I wanted to go see if I could see them. And Mama is nested in a tree that she nests in every other year, maybe, or for a while there it was every year. But it's the hollow of a tree where there used to be a branch, and so it's very deep. So she's in there so deep that you can't even really see her, and I've tried. I keep going up on the hill and looking, and I can't see your eyeballs even. And the other day I was up there, and I heard her from inside the tree, so I know she's in there. But I went up there today because I didn't see, as I walk our dog over there occasionally too, and we walked over there this afternoon and I didn't see the male, who I call Papa, who's always on guard, you know. And so then of course I'm all worried, and so I went over there just before dark because that's when they start chattering, you know, back and forth, because that's when he hunts, you know. Nothing. So now I'm worried.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, he was probably hunting. You know, he knows that he's got a bunch of little mouths to feed coming up soon, and so he may be hunting and stashing prey items for the coming mouths to feed. They do that. They will, you know, gather a bunch of prey, get a mouse, few mice every day, and then stash them, especially because it's so cold. They freeze right away, so it's not like they're going to rot or anything like that. Not that that bothers raptors. He was probably hunting. That would be my guess.
Yeah. And they're more quiet. You know, once they lay those eggs, what I've noticed is they're pretty quiet. You know, they don't hoot as much as they did beforehand, you know?
So, right. And yeah, you keep in mind that they see you coming long before you see them, because their eyesight is so good. And so they might just be very quiet because the eggs are getting ready to hatch possibly, or maybe they switched and the male is incubating and the female has gone off and she's hunting somewhere else, you know.
Yeah,
there's
all
kinds of considerations.
Yes, I sure hope so. You can bet I'll be there tomorrow looking again. But you were, before the break, we were talking about, because people in the chat room are saying, well, it's so cold for those eggs right now. And you were talking about how moisture affects them more in the cold than the cold sometimes. And last year,
Even though the eggs had hatched and there were actually owlets, Mama had nested in a, the park had put up a owl box. And she has raised a few different broods in there. But last year in March, we had, it was like a Saturday night. I just remember it just plain as day. And it rained like 5 inches and it was cold. And the next day I went there, the babies had died. Mama left. I saw her leave. And it was like, of course, I'm putting human emotions on this, but she was in a different part of the area and she kept looking back at this nest. And I just knew, you know, and then she flew away with the male and I didn't see him again for a few weeks. And then about a week later, I had walked by the nest and my daughter and I were both there. And the owl box had fallen. And I think there were no holes in the bottom of that box. And I think those babies died of hypothermia. I think that they drowned, actually. You know, we talked about that, you know, and they can't handle both the cold and the wet. And, So the box had fallen and I didn't go, my daughter went over there and looked and she saw the babies. They were under the box. And, you know, I called the park and I said, listen, you guys have to bury these babies and otherwise I'll come with a shovel tomorrow because they deserve a decent burial. And they were all gone the very next day. So, but sadness, how sad is that? I mean, you know, it's just, oh my gosh. It's nature.
Yeah, that's just, know. You know, it's a good, yeah, it is nature, and it's, but it's a good example of humans that are interfering with nature who have good intentions and want to help, but just one little thing like that, not putting holes in the bottom of a nest box that you put up can be detrimental. And
just
tiny things, and which is, you know, brings me back to the feeding of wild animals, why it's not a good idea to feed them, especially owls. When we have an eruption or something, if people are out photographing unusual owls like snowies or whatever else it is, if you cause them to flush, that causes them to expend an abnormal amount of energy to take off and fly away from something that is bothering them. And they can starve to death very easily because when they come down to Minnesota, they're coming down because there's a lack of food wherever it is that they're from, where they normally spend their springs and winters. And so they're already starving to death. And then they come down here and they're getting scared off of their nest or away from their area. And, you know, people are well-meaning. They just want to take photographs and stay far away. But a lot of times just causing it to flush a couple of times will expend way too much energy and they'll die.
Mm. Yeah, it's so, yeah. So Karen is asking, are they put off by human proximity? I'm guessing she's talking eagles or owls.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, I'm not as familiar with owls, but I know a lot of people that have them in their yard. And certainly if it's an area that is highly populated with humans, especially walking right underneath the nest or right underneath the tree, they're not going to choose that area to nest in or to hunt in because we are predators. We are, you know, we are the top of the food chain. So, however, because of the human population in the world, the wildlife has had to learn to adapt. And so they learn that they can, that they're getting food from human behavior, right? So they're finding the carcasses on the side of the road because humans have hit rabbits and whatever. And so, you know, it does, they've learned to cohabitate and learn to live with human interference. I thought it was interesting last year when the pandemic first started and everyone had completely shut down and stayed in their inside and it was, you know, spooky and people, no one was out, were outside and the wildlife came out, you know, all over the world. It was like there were people who were taking photographs of the wildlife coming in and that's because they're more comfortable because the humans aren't out there, right? So You know, in some cases they were looking for food, depending on what the species was. But for the most part, it's because there wasn't that human interference. You know, there wasn't the danger of cars driving by or the humans, you know, walking in an area to scare them away. So, yes, certainly humans are detrimental.
Yeah, I bet. So it's amazing that they really are flourishing in the metro area, I think, because there's just so many eagles' nests. Like you said, there were like 10 nests within a 10-mile area of that DNR nest. You know, isn't that amazing? And the bald eagles have really come back because, you know, I don't remember ever seeing an eagle until like the 80s, maybe, you know? So, wow.
Yeah, and so our program, the Non-Game Wildlife Program, we were very instrumental in bringing back the bald eagle in the state. You know, with the money that is brought in on the tax forms where you can donate to the Non-Game Wildlife Program, we started with, along with some other partners, a reintroduction program where we got bald eagles from other states, from Alaska, where their population was still doing moderately well, and the population had plummeted in the 70s, and that was because of DDT, and lots of different raptors and other birds, their populations plummeted because of the DDT would cause their eggshells to become so thin that when they tried to incubate them, they would just crush the eggs. And finally, you know, Rachel Carson and others figured out that that's what it was, that it was from DDT. So once that was outlawed, then we started this reintroduction program in Minnesota, and they have just been increasing and doing well ever since, to the point where they have been removed from the endangered species list, and their population is no longer in trouble. And so it's considered a success story. And, you know, along with the trumpeter swans, their population has exploded in the state, and their population is doing really well too. So I feel very fortunate to be part of a program that, you know, that's a feather in our cap.
Oh, absolutely. You guys have done such great work.
Yeah, and it's just been, you know, it's fun to know the history, and we keep on our webpage and on our Facebook page, we do have a fair amount of history of our success stories on those pages where you can read back on exactly how it all happened and when it all began for the peregrine falcon, the trumpeter swans, the bald eagles. And because they're not on the endangered species list anymore, we don't focus our efforts or our research or surveys on them anymore, because once a population has recovered, then there's not a need to study or research that particular species any longer. We want to focus our efforts on the species that are in trouble still, the ones that really need the research and surveys. And so, you know, a lot of people think that we still do surveys, and we haven't. We haven't. There has not been a survey of bald eagles in Minnesota since 2005.
Wow.
It was done in conjunction with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. That doesn't mean we'll never do one again. I think it's probably time, you know, but there are species that are in greater conservation need than the bald eagle, and so that's where we focus our efforts for now, because it's not cheap to do surveys. You know, you have to, especially for bald eagles, you have to fly, you can imagine how expensive it is to fly every square mile of the state.
Oh yeah. So, oh, for sure.
So what species are you guys focusing on then? What species are in danger currently that you're working with?
Well, common terns is one, and common terns are not common. unfortunately, there's only two areas in Minnesota that they currently nest in, and those two areas frequently get washed out by rain because they're sort of on islands. And so those are areas that we're trying to protect and trying to protect their nesting areas. One of them is up near Duluth, and it often gets predated by gulls, herring gulls, and other gulls will often go in there and scare the terns away, and then they eat their eggs. And so we've put up some barriers and some protection efforts to cover them. some of the other things are other non-game species that are not necessarily birds. So we have research and surveys going on for wood turtles and Blanding's turtles, and there's a cricket frog, and there's dozens and dozens. But those are the few that I can think of off the top of my head. And again, those are the research and surveys that we have going on now is all on our webpage, mndnr.gov/non-game. And non-game is one word.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So Kat is asking in our chat room, she's got a question. She said, is it true that birds will reject young if you put them back in a nest after they've fallen out?
Yes and no. It's mostly no. They don't have a sense of smell, at least not to the point where they're going to reject it. They have expended so much energy to bring a chick to that stage, just to the hatching stage. They've been, you know, you think about how much time they spent incubating and, you know, first building the nest and then mating and then laying the eggs and then incubating them for 35 days or whatever it is. And then feeding it constantly. I mean, those chicks need to be fed multiple mm-hmm. times a day. And once they have invested that much, they're very unlikely to just abandon. And so you can easily put something like that back in the nest. Now, if it were kicked out of the nest for some other reason, if the adults knew, because nature knows, they can tell, they have an instinct, and they can tell if there's something seriously wrong with the chick, it's not going to survive. They will reject it. And so, you know, you may put a chick back in the nest that was really just not going to make it anyway. So it depends. Like everything, it depends. And yeah. It's hard to judge exactly. But most of the time you can put birds back because they're so vulnerable in the spring when there's spring storms and wind and lightning and all of that. They do nest below down of all kinds of different birds. And You can usually put them back up safely if the chicks are not injured. And most of them are built for bouncing at that mm-hmm. age. Mm-hmm. So even if they fall out of a tree, as long as they didn't break a wing or something, they usually do pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you, so the DNR goes in sometimes to this nest, the cam nest, and they take the eaglets down, and you kind of look at them and you look them over, and then you put a band on them, and then you put them back, and then they're fine, right? The parents come back, and mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. yeah,
yep. We do that with peregrine falcons as well. The parents are not very happy about it, but
no.
they don't abandon. You know, they let you know that they let you know their feelings for sure.
Oh, of course.
You know, screeching and swooping and things like that. But mm-hmm. they typically come right back to the nest. And what's interesting, I've seen in some cases where the chicks have actually been pulled from the nest because of injury, and mm-hmm. they go to a rehabber, and then they're brought back as soon as possible, and the parents resume care after, you know, day or two
awesome.
Even.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
It's always a very, you know, fragile time. It's hard to know if they will, in fact, come back, but it's yeah. happened a few times. That's pretty
awesome.
Cool.
And mm-hmm. I remember a few years ago that one eagle, so there were three of them in the nest, and that one was really sick. And it was years ago, probably 5 or 6 years ago. And, oh, my gosh. And then... Mm-hmm. There happened to be an NSP truck in the area or whatever, and then they went up and they got that baby, brought him to the Raptor Center, but he died, right? She died of, she just couldn't.
Yeah,
I
actually was the one that took it to the Raptor Center. I went there.
And you did?
So
fabulous.
I brought it there, and it had a broken wing. So that's what was wrong with it, and it had to be euthanized. There's no you know, there was no way it was going to survive in the wild again. And it's just cruel to take an animal like a bald eagle and commit it to a lifetime of captivity.
So it was
euthanized. And, you know, I'm not a proponent of necessarily going up in the nest and saving them for that very reason, because what happened the following year is the same thing. One of the chicks was struggling and probably had a broken wing, possibly from one of the parents stepping on it when it was young and fragile. Mm-hmm. And the female took that chick and fed it to the other two. And that's really important food for them.
Yeah.
There's so much nutrition in those bodies. And so, you know, what happened the first year is that chick was taken out and then they couldn't.
Yeah.
They didn't have that nutrition that could have been fed to the other two chicks. And so it's hard to watch.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why I like, you know, we put a warning on there that these are the things that can happen in the nest. And last year, it happened again. The youngest one was suffering, and you could tell it was not doing very well, and it was struggling. It was smaller, and it just struggled so much. But it wouldn't have done well in the wild had it been brought to an adult age. It would have been weaker, and it would have probably perished at some point. And she did end up feeding that to the other two. But watching it was
hard. I do remember that.
The nestlings were really brutal to the youngest one. It was brutal. It was really brutal. Mm-hmm. I actually had to turn it off, and I'm not squeamish at all, but it was tough to watch. And, you know, that's the other thing, that they learn how to fight. Eagles are very, very territorial. If you've seen, you know, visitors come into our nest, you'll see the adults quickly come in and try to beat the crap out of it.
Yeah.
They learn that instinct from the time they're in the nest. Mm-hmm. They learn how to beat each other up. That's what they do. That's their survival instinct.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Again, it's tough to watch, but.
Nature.
But that's nature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know.
Stella, there was a question in the chat room along that same line. Do eagles ever attack humans?
It's really rare. I've heard of it happening, but not necessarily attacking for, you know, anger purposes. There was one a few years up on the North Shore where I think it was a juvenile that was going after someone, and I think they assumed that that bird probably had lead poisoning, which affects their brain.
Oh, yeah.
And so once that toxin gets into their system, then, you know, things go wonky, just like with humans.
Mm-hmm.
And I did read just recently, maybe it was last year, the same thing happened up on the North Shore, that there was another juvenile that was attacking people in the area. And it's, you know, typically it's some sort of a toxin that has gotten into their system and affects their brain.
Wow.
So it's not normal. They certainly will, but it's not normal. And even when we take the chicks out of the nest to ban them, they don't come down and swoop our heads like peregrines will. Peregrines will take your head off if you're taking their chicks. So we really have to use protection and precaution when we're taking the peregrine chicks to ban them, because you know, a bird like that coming at you at 230 miles an hour will injure you severely.
Severely, no kidding. And the mental distress, I would imagine that you suffer from that, having a falcon attack you. Oh my gosh, no.
Well, and they do a thing called stooping, and so it's when they come at something. They're coming at it with full force, you know, like think of a baseball coming at you at 230 miles an hour, or whatever baseballs travel at when they're thrown by good pitchers. It really, you know, hits you with, I watched a guy 6'4" get completely thrown off of his feet and blown, like, you know, 6 feet back from a peregrine hitting it. He hit him and knocked the wind out of him from, you know, it. Yeah, they can be really scary. But eagles don't tend to do that. Thank goodness, because they're so big. But
yeah,
they, you know, they'll swoop down and let you know that they know you're messing with their babies and all of that. And they do a lot of screaming. They're very vocal when that happens. But they generally don't attack people.
Yeah.
Wow, cool. Well, we're getting towards the end of our show. We're going to have to wrap up, and there's still questions coming in. So I think we're going to have to have you on again, Lori, and talk about the eagles and how people can find you. We did post your website in our chat room here, and we'll post it again on our Facebook page too, so people know how to access your videos, your webcams, make donations, follow the work that you guys are doing, all of that good stuff.
Yeah, and there's a newsletter that I send out, so people can sign up for the newsletter to get updates about the camera nest. And I'll be working on that newsletter to get it out by the end of the week. And all of the past newsletters are there on the Eagle Cam page that I gave everyone. And so it's good to go to that page as opposed to YouTube from time to time so you can see the updates and things. So,
awesome. Well,
you guys just do a fantastic job, Lori. Thank you, because we sure appreciate all of your efforts and all of your experience. Gosh. Oh, gosh. I love it. I love it. So come back and visit with us for sure, especially, you know, later in the, you know, nesting season or whatever, and we'll have lots of stories, I am most certain. You know, Dave just reminded me in the chat room of when we were there one time taking photos, and there was like a council of eagles above the nest. That was that year that, you know, the female had lost her mate, and there was just a million of them vying for her, you know?
So, absolutely. I'd be happy to come back on whenever, you know, whenever it works, just reach out and we'll schedule another time and talk again, and hopefully we'll have chicks by then.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So for those of you listening, we have to do a shout out to our sibling show, The Calling. They're going to talk about animal spirit familiars tomorrow night, and that is at 8 p.m. Eastern time right here on the Para X Radio Network. Lori, thank you so much for visiting with us tonight and sharing all of your information and all of what the Minnesota DNR non-game does, because you do such good work. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
All right. And that's going to bring our show to an end this tremendous Tuesday.
Yeah.
So definitely had fun tonight. Flew like it always does. Our flew by.
Absolutely. So join us next week again and have a great week, everyone. And we will see you. Are we early? We've got a couple minutes left.
Well, we've got about one, but we still have to say thanks to everybody. I was waiting for you, Steph.
Okay, sorry. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening. If we have troops listening, hey, stay safe. We appreciate your service. And
Absolutely. And our chat room, thanks for tuning in. You guys have had some awesome questions tonight, so thank you for putting those out there. And everybody else that's been listening, thank you so much. And Para X, our amazing hosts, and Sarge, our amazing producer, thank you so much for everything tonight. And yeah, we're definitely gonna have to bring a part two up to this topic once there's chicks to talk about.
Yes, love it.
Be fun.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.